Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, and this is the local take on WCLK. Today, we will look at issues and organizations that make a positive difference in the Atlanta area. This morning, we're speaking with Daryl Foster, a dancer and choreographer who has created Citizen Lift, a project that captures the voices of millennial men of color regarding their voices and voting. Daryl, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. And the reason I ask you to join us specifically for this broadcast is to talk about voting from the perspective of young African-American men. And you have actually captured some young African-American men talking about their relationship to voting. Why was that subject important to you?
Well, I realized that over my work with Lyft, is the organization I created in 2009, 2010, I realized that there was no voice at the table from young African-American men, or as I'm saying it over the course of this project, men of color, because I think that it's important that it extends beyond African-American men, that it also is inclusive of Hispanic males. Right now, to the forefront recently, Islamic, Arabic male, Asian men. There's just a lack of voice from minority male voices out there.
And why was it so important to you that these voices needed to be amplified?
Because there was a lot of conversation about men of color, but not a lot of conversation from men of color. And the conversation that was out there from men of color was very reactionary. So a lot of the men were reacting to what was being said about them or being done to them. So I felt like it was a good, there was room in the conversation to, for us to interject how we feel and have a platform for us.
Well, one of the questions that you asked the gentleman that I thought was so impactful was, did they think their voice mattered? And we're going to take a few minutes now to listen to some of the conversation that you captured from Xavier Durman and Charles Guyton. Mm-hmm.
I do feel like my voice matters, but at the same time, I feel like it may not be effective because, for one, I don't really speak a lot on political matters with my peers because we don't have those conversations, and also we don't really take a lot of action, whether it be we don't care or we get stuck in our day-to-day lives and routines that don't allow us to go out and be proactive and voice our opinions and be a part of things that really may make a change.
Do you feel like your voice matters in the political process?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. I feel like stuff like that is already planned, and it's just a way of keeping us feeling like we're involved, but I don't think we really are. I think whatever's going to happen is already going to happen, and they know it's going to happen. It's just entertainment. Like, it's just something to keep people busy on media. I don't think the people's vote really matters at all.
Do you vote?
I do vote. I have voted.
Now, one of the things that I thought was so dynamic about those two conversations was that Xavier Durman felt very strongly that his voice mattered, whereas Charles Guyton, he didn't seem so sure that his voice mattered. And while he said he votes, he also said, I voted, like it could have been a one-time thing. So you've got this one gentleman who thinks his voice does matter and one gentleman who explains why he doesn't think that his voice matters.
Well, sidebar, I heard a statistic the other day that said if you're under the age of 30, you've never voted for two white candidates in the presidential election. That blew me away. I'm like, am I that old? Because I guess the last time they voted for Obama was Obama and oh, my God, that slips in my mind.
But Obama and Romney.
And Romney, right. And then the 8 years before that, it was Bush.
Obama and McCain.
McCain, I'm sorry. Yeah. So I guess, what's that, 8 years? Then if you're under 30, that's like 22. Anyway, so, yeah, he voted one time because before that he wasn't old enough to vote. So, but in terms of Xavier Durman, the conversation I had with him off the air was very militant and very angry. So by the time I videotaped him, it was completely different than what happened off the air. What he said off the air, off the video, was not what I got initially, but it prompted me to do the video. He was very militant about the fact that why was he supposed to be voting, because the whole thing is rigged and it doesn't matter. There's a lot of young black men who are really into the conspiracy theory thing. They feel like everything is rigged, everything is stacked against them, that everything is weighted in a direction that is going to, you know, equal their demise.
Yeah, Charles Guyton mm-hmm. even said that he felt like it was predestined.
We're just kind of going through the motions. And if you really think about it, in the state of Georgia, this is the first time in an election where Georgia could go either way, or could, there has a potential to go either way. But if you look at, you know, previously when I voted in Georgia, it's like, I'm just going to go through the motions because this is a red state. You know, Atlanta's a blue dot in a red state, or a blue circle in a red square, I mean, you know, however you want to say it. So however the state votes, it's going to go Republican. It's going to go conservative. And I'm not saying that men of color don't have the right to vote their convictions as conservatives. But what I am saying is, the part of the reason we exercise our right to vote is because we want to sway an outcome either way. We want to be a part of a process. We want to be part of a political process, not just because we want to go through a right or exercise a right, you know. So Xavier was really, you know, set on, you know, what difference does it make, because it's going to happen one way or the other anyway.
And I can understand why that might be frustrating if you're in a red state to vote Democrat for years and years and years and know that it doesn't matter. Or if you're in a blue state and vote Republican for years and years and kind of know that it doesn't matter. And it's kind of disheartening that our politics and our nation has kind of come to that, where people feel, you know, like their vote doesn't matter, that it's all entertainment.
Right, right. And not only that, I think that when I started the project, and just to be clear, I don't think the listeners know that the name of the project is Citizen Lift. Like the name of my dance company is Lift, Men Dance Life. It's about, you know, men of color and six very distinct topics that we focus on. And one of the topics is politics, and this year we're focusing on politics. And the subject matter is, the name of the project is Citizen Lift. And it's about the men of color as citizens of the United States of America. So it's beyond just voting. It's about, who are we voting for? What happens once we vote? Who are we putting in office? What is our role as men of color in the American political process? Are we in office? What is the job of a citizen? How do you become a good citizen? How do you serve the nation? How do you serve your community? And voting in politics is just a cog in the machine of being a good citizen. Voting is just a part of that.
And that brings us right to two other voices that you captured, Corey Hartzell and Niklaus
Almanor.
Thank you. So let's listen to them. Mm-hmm. Let's take a moment and listen to them.
Yes, I feel like my voice matters in the American political process. I feel like a lot of people do a lot of social media posting and a lot of marching, but they're not doing a lot of research to really make an effective change. And I fall short of that sometimes too, but I feel like if we at least go to the polls and vote and show that we care that much, then I think they would have a choice to listen to us. They can't deny it because, okay, they're out here, they're really trying to get and be heard. So I think it does matter. We just have to make it matter.
In this generation, I think there's two big issues, really. One is kind of getting help when we're not as much of a monolith as we may have been before. So you have young men like myself who are educated, gainfully employed. We're not quote unquote disadvantaged in most categories. And then you've got young men that are unlike me, but we're both men of color. We face various levels of discrimination. And then I do also think that much of the progress that we thought we've made has either been eroded or wasn't made in the first place. So it's still fairly unsafe to be black in very many places, whether you're a man of privilege or not, of accomplishment or not. You could be Skip Gates and he's not in my generation, but it is my time. Or you could be Laquan McDonald. And either way, the establishment is coming for you.
Now, the thing that stood out to me with those two gentlemen is, one, Corey was so enthusiastic about his voice mattering and his vote mattering. And then the other gentleman talking so much about the class issue that people of color face in our country. And he kind of harkens back to the past when maybe the black vote was monolithic. And he explains that it's not monolithic, but that no matter what your reputation, no matter what your accomplishments, in some areas in our country, he says it's still not safe to be black.
Okay, the beautiful part about these two men being a part of this project is, and this is really targets the diversity of men of color. Like, we're not monolithic. Niklaus is the, you know, there's a wonderful book, and I hate when you quote a book and you can't think of the name of the book in that moment, but there's a wonderful book that came out about three years ago that really broke down the class structure of Africans in America. It used to be a time you were black, but then they broke it down into several different categories of blackness, and I really hate, you're going to have to go get on Google and search who this guy is, but because I can't remember right now this morning, one cup of coffee. But Niklaus is the descendant of Caribbean American ancestry. Like, his mother is Aruban, his father is Haitian. He grew up in Brooklyn, New York. And then, you know, we met, I think, in Florida at Florida State University while I was getting my master's there. Niklaus is coming from that perspective. You understand what I'm saying? He's coming from the perspective of Caribbean immigrants to America. And he's coming from the perspective of very well educated. He's coming from the perspective of, now I work in the government. I think he's an employee of, you know, he works for FEMA. And so he's working in the government process. He works for the government, and he's coming from that perspective. Corey's coming from a completely other perspective. He moved to Atlanta from the south side of Chicago and is just realizing the impact of moving from the south side of Chicago to Atlanta, Georgia, to pursue a goal and a dream. You know, he's a dancer. He came here to pursue entertainment and dance, and discovering something so much bigger than that. And I'm asking him questions about being from the south side of Chicago from the perspective of how we view black men from the south side of Chicago at the war zone that they portray on the, you know, the news. And he's like looking at me like, what are you talking about? You know, what are you talking about? We're just regular people like everybody else. So by the time that regular people situation gets to us through the media, we kind of look at it, all black men, as being, you know, traumatized, PTSD, and, you know, crawling out of the trenches, bleeding. That's not his reality, although he's a black man from the south side of Chicago.
So the media really does our country a disservice
relying on these
very stereotypical views of young men of color.
But I wouldn't even say it's stereotypical. What I would say is, yeah, that male exists on the south side of Chicago. But if you want to get a realistic idea about a black man from the south side of Chicago, and I've spoken to many of them, they all have a different story. So part of the problem in America is too many of us have not sat down with a black person, a black male, and said, hey brother, what's going on? What is your life like? You know? And then they would say, well, this is me. This is my struggle. Corey's struggle is not gang violence and shootouts, even though he lives in that community. His struggle is something very different. Corey's struggle is the fact that he has been a part of an education system that found it more beneficial to pass him through than to adequately educate him about the world in which he's about to enter and have an impact on. So now he's interfacing and interacting within in a world that he hasn't been properly equipped to deal with. And that creates tremendous amounts of frustration within that man. Tremendous amounts of anger, tremendous amounts of feeling defeated. That's Corey's issue. Not the fact that he's been shot at and he's lost all his friends to gang and drugs and all of that sort of thing. That's a whole other issue.
And that actually emphasizes what Niklau said about the fact that the black vote or the black voice is not a monolith, it's if not. It ever was.
It's not. It's really not. And, you know, Niklau, like I said earlier, comes from Brooklyn. You know, he grew up in Brooklyn, New York, the son of immigrants. You know, mother has a PhD. Maybe she got two. I don't know.
But very privileged.
Very. I wouldn't even say privileged, because when you say that word privilege, it paints a type of picture. I would say very intelligent. He comes from a very intelligent parentage. You know what I'm saying? Which affects his life. So you see that in how he has navigated his life and his existence. You know, because I think when you say privilege, I come from privilege. Four car, parents, you know, house of a certain type, you know, Jack and Jill of America. That's privilege, you know, when I think about privilege, you know, pick up the phone, make something happen, privilege. Niklau doesn't come from privilege. He comes from intelligent, educated, hardworking, industrious people. You know, so we got all different kinds of stories that are happening within men of color. And it's not all shoot 'em up, bang, bang, dead in the street.
Now, Daryl, is that the reason that drove you to do this project? What were you thinking when you gathered these young men of color and started asking them questions about their place in the world and their place in our society?
Well, the thing is, they kind of gathered me, which was funny. Well, the reason this all happened was I'm not going out to march. I'm not protesting. I'm not carrying a sign. That's not what I'm going to do. It's not in me to do that. And I felt bad about that for a period of time, you know, and I'm very spiritual. And God's like, you know what? You don't need to go out there and march and protest. That's not what, you know, you are here to do. I've given you another platform. My platform is my art, my dance, my choreography. I'm a writer. These are my platforms that I have. So I said, okay, let's get busy with that. So I picked up the tools that were accessible to me, a studio, a camera, music, dance. These are the things. And so the men are around me because I have a dance company of men of color, you know. So let me get in the studio and let my work speak for me and let my work speak for the men in which I work with. So it was an organic, natural process for me.
On that note, we're going to listen to one last brother, Jay Battle. And the thing that I liked about his words is he says so succinctly what many of our experts have said on this show. And he talks about local voting versus national voting.
I feel like my voice matters in the political process if I can connect with my peers. Other than that, I don't think it matters on a national scale. I think it matters in the community here first, in my community first. Then it would matter nationally.
Do you vote?
Yes, I vote. I'm skeptical about voting this year only because I personally don't care for either candidate. But the best candidate to run the country, I will vote for.
Do you think most of your peers vote, or why not?
I think most of my peers vote because it's the thing to do, but I don't think they have an understanding about voting. I think that voting, back in the day, we had to vote for a reason. We were fighting for a cause. I think now it's just a popularity thing. I also feel like a lot of us are blindsided to the fact that the Electoral College votes are the votes that actually select the president as opposed to the individual popularity vote. So a lot of people are so hyped about voting, but they don't understand that the voting actually makes sense at your local levels first before it gets to the national level. I feel like if we knew who our local people were and actually knew who they were before we put them in office, knew who they support, know what they stand for, then once we get to the president level, then we will have a clear understanding of who we're actually voting for, because we put those people in office to represent us as the people. On the local level, we need people that are in our communities that actually be in the community, not just sit behind a desk and run these local and state levels. I think that we need to actually know who we're putting in office in the cities and state first before we actually get to the presidential elections.
So Jay very nicely talked about that voting starts locally, and that getting to know the people that we ask to represent us on a local level is so much more important than getting to the national and to the presidential election. How do you feel about that? Is that the kind of activism that you think you can support, just voting on a local level?
Well, first of all, I'm angry with Jay because, very angry with Jay because we we had a conversation at my home that turned very passionate. And, you know, Jay had very controversial views about voting and the political process and citizenship that didn't make it onto the tape. You know, I'm like, okay, I got to get this brother in front of the camera and, you know, get him to talk. And then it all got cleaned up. It got all, you know, politically cleaned up. I said, Jay, you should run for somebody's office. So I was mad at Jay because all of the things that he said didn't make it where I wanted to make it to. But Jay really is one of those brothers that feels like, you know, we're in a sense of desperation in terms of things being rigged and there being a conspiracy theory and, you know, voting doesn't matter. You know, they're going to toss the whole box out behind the house, but after the voting day is over. Well, he's really into that. But he is right. What he nicely put, and you have to read between the lines, is he really does advocate for true citizenship, which is get to work in the streets before you even go to the polls. You know, that's where the work happens, on the local level. On the local level, it's not just about who you elect. It's about you as a citizenry getting to work in your own community on the local level, holding local officials accountable before you even vote on the president. And Obama even said this, I think, at the Howard commencement exercises. He was basically saying, yeah, all of y'all got together and voted me in office. Then you just kind of abandoned me when it was time to put a Congress. So, I mean, I didn't have any Congress to work with. They have totally thrown Obama under the bus, by the way. We elected President Obama, didn't elect a Congress to help him, and then basically all of the things that he wanted to do couldn't get done because there was no Congress for him to work with him. There was no local level, you know, government to work with him. Things didn't get done the way he envisioned, and then we all blame him for it. So I think Jay has a poignant purpose and poignant idea about how government really works. It works grassroots up, not president down.
That is it, in a nutshell. Yeah. It works grassroots up. Every vote matters and every vote counts.
And every voice matters.
Every voice matters. Yes. And, Daryl, one of the things that I am just so fascinated about is that you, a young male of color, a young African-American man, and you and your friends passionately discuss politics. I think if you look at the general news, not just about African-Americans, about millennials, about the young people in the country, it says to us almost every night that you all aren't interested. And here you are showing us and describing these passionate conversations, proving that you all are interested. You just need someone to hear your voice.
Well, that's partly true. And I will say, you know, I will take some of the indictment there and on behalf of the men that are not here, because some of them are not interested. A lot of them are not interested. But, you know, sitting in a room with me, I'm going to get in your face and we're going to talk about it, you know, because a lot of them want to talk about popular topics like who's on the radio and the video and what artist is this and what's on Instagram. They're very shallow in that way. But I blame that on the lack of intergenerational exchange. I blame it on that because they are not interested in older people, and older people are frustrated with them, and there's a schism between the two groups, and that intergenerational exchange doesn't happen like it did in the 60s, in the 70s. You know, you'd be in the room or at dinner, you'd have an 18-year-old and a 20-year-old, a 30, a 40, a 50, and a 60 all in one kind of conversation together, a part of the movement, making stuff happen. That doesn't happen as much anymore, you know. And partly I blame it on the millennials because they have this word that drives me insane, which is relevant. It's not relevant. You're not relevant. So I'm like, okay, I'm irrelevant. So they kind of have that viewpoint. And then we are looking at them going, ugh, you know, you guys or whatever. So I think I force myself into their world and force them to have the conversation and open their eyes. And they force me to, they're like batteries. They give me energy. So I think that intergenerational exchange is so important when it comes to men of color. They need older people. We need them.
Now, Daryl, we've been talking about politics and voting, and as you know, Tuesday, November 8th, is the
a week from tomorrow
election day. So we're almost there. How can our listeners, if what you said today has resonated with them and they want to learn more about Daryl Foster and LIFT, how can they find out about you? How can they learn more about this project that you're doing?
Well, right now, I am in the process of building a new website. I just opened a brand new studio in downtown Atlanta. It's called Go, a Dance Boutique. And it's important because it gives me a place to house everything I'm working on. We do use it as a gallery space. I'm currently presenting the work of Joshua Rashad McFadden. We're working together on Citizen Lift. He's going to create six huge close to mural size paintings based on his photography with the work. So I have a space downtown. It's called Go, a Dance Boutique on Mitchell Street, 217 Mitchell. It's a place for me to give classes. It's a place for me to rehearse my projects for LIFT and also Emerging. I have Emerging, which is a choreographer's workshop for up-and-coming choreographers to nurture and train that voice, because you can give voice through the choreography, not just through the spoken word. But my website will be up within the week, so I can't give you the address for that now, but I can definitely be found on Instagram at Daryl Foster, and my Twitter is Daryl Foster, at Daryl Foster. You can find me there. Follow me there for all updates. The LIFT Instagram is at Men Dance Life. My Emerging Instagram is Emerging NCW, and that stands for New Choreographers Workshop. And you can email us at the studio at studio217@gmail.com, or you can email me personally at DarylLFoster@gmail.com. So very accessible in many, many ways. And a new website posting will be via all of those places as soon as they're up.
Well, Daryl, I want to thank you so much for LIFT, for Yay. That Citizen LIFT. I loved listening to those young men and seeing them and hearing their voices. So thank you so much for amplifying the voices of young men of color. And thank you for Yay. Joining us and
thank
sharing
you.
With
thank
us
you.
On this last Saturday of the most unprecedented presidential campaign
the presidential
in the
circus.
History of our country. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm Kiplin Primus, and you're listening to The Local Take on WCLK. Part of our mission and our effort to engage with the communities we serve. If you have an issue or a community organization you would like us to feature on The Local Take, you can leave a voicemail on the WCLK Community Engagement Line at 404-880-6211. Or you can email me at kiplinprimus@gmail.com.